All right, so in lesson 48, we're talking once again, or still, or whatever, about Paul's third journey. So as we go through the questions, of course, we'll cover a number of these things also. But I think what we've done as far as in the lesson sheet itself is that we got down here toward the bottom of page. Is it 190? I wonder why my page decided to resize. bottom of page 190. As we were talking about the fact that Paul's getting ready to he's getting ready to leave wherever he is right now. Where is he right now? He's been there the longest time. Ephesus, okay? And so then he went north and he went to Troas, okay? Both of these things are found, references to these are found in the books of 1 and 2 Corinthians. If you look in the book of Acts, it just says that Paul decided to go to Macedonia and that's where he went. And so you get more detail in these books of 1 and 2 Corinthians. That's why Mickey said that we need to read 1 and 2 Corinthians and 1 and 2 Thessalonians and the entire book of Genesis and the whole New Testament and things like that. So, you know, a lot of stuff. all right. And then it says that he hurried across, but he went across to where? Where was he going?
Macedonia.
So, as we go through these things right here. see if I can get this to work without just completely messing my machine up. Oh, it worked. Okay. So if you look at your lesson book to fill in the blanks, of course, we looked at the fact that up here at the top that we started the trip off at Antioch, and then he visited places that we've talked about before. Galatia and Phrygia. And then as we come down here, it says that Paul went to Ephesus. He went fairly directly to Ephesus. He didn't spend a lot of time visiting other churches, though he did strengthen the churches as he went through. It doesn't appear that he spent a good deal of time on his way. But so he went directly across to Ephesus. And when he did that from this place where he was for 3 years, the truth spread, it says, throughout the province of what?
Asia.
Okay. So, that whole Asia area there is something different than we consider Asia to be today. We consider Asia to be over toward India and further on. In that time, Asia was a province on the what we would call the western edge of Turkey today. Or I should say western end, not western edge, a fairly big province. and of course we discussed the fact that in the province of Asia are those, how many churches of Revelation 2 and 3? Seven churches of Revelation chapters 2 and 3 are all there in Asia, and of course those were most likely established at that particular time, except for Ephesus, which had already been established as far as the church goes. all right. It says here that he learned about problems that were going on with the churches in Galatia, which was just a little bit to the southeast of where he was right there. So what are some of the churches in Galatia that we know about? Iconium and the other Antioch, right? Antioch of Pisidia. All right? So, and this is where we come to some conclusion as to either he did or didn't write the book of Galatians here. Other people feel that he wrote the book of Galatians while he was in Corinth on this third journey. excuse me. I find this kind of a strange way to phrase this. After some time, Paul decided to collect an offering from the predominantly Gentile congregations. I believe that was sort of his mission in his own mind when he started off from Antioch. I'm not sure that it just popped into his head here in Ephesus. And so that's why I think that, for example, when he was going through these through Galatia and Phrygia and the other provinces on his way to Ephesus, that he most likely took up collections from those churches at Derbe and Lystra and Iconium and Antioch of Pisidia. So he wanted to go, now that he'd been, how long approximately was he in Ephesus then, teaching and preaching? 3 years. It's interesting to note when you read through just this one here, that they seem to change their mind a couple of times as to whether it was 3 years or 2 years. I think in one place it says around 3 years, and another place it says 3.5, and some places it says 2. But I think we see a mention in the book of 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, I believe, about the 3 years that he spent in Ephesus. So he was going to go around and continue to collect offerings from the Gentile congregations to take to the Jewish brethren in Judea. Now, we looked a couple of weeks ago about the fact that we can identify a certain number of churches anyway, at least in the Judea area. So it's not like nobody knew where these churches were in Judea. Now, when it says that he was going to take the contribution or the collection or the offering, rather, to the brethren in Judea, how was that to be distributed? So it would just go to Jerusalem and then they would distribute it on to the other churches, right? What do we call that? Mickey went through that quite extensively. What kind of arrangement is that called in human terms? Yeah, it would be. Sponsoring church is what we have a tendency to have heard it called. We say that people will say that they send it to a church in charge, to elders in charge of a particular congregation, and those elders then send it on to other churches in the area. That's not the way that it went. And we can show that is not the case, because he took it to the brethren that were in Judea. There's no instance anywhere showing that he gave it to the church at Jerusalem, they distributed it on to anybody else. There was another time when there was a problem with the church in Jerusalem, and they took up a contribution and gave it to the church at Jerusalem because they had needy saints. This is not the same collection. As he was leaving Ephesus and heading up for Macedonia, and he stopped in, of course, Troas on the way, but he sent Timothy and Erastus ahead of him to go to where? Macedonia, yeah. So they were sent to go up to Macedonia and make collections from the churches up there in Macedonia. Now, what churches can you think of just off the top of your head in Macedonia? Philippi, Thessalonica, and Berea. Yeah, at least those. And I think that we can probably say that there were more, because not because of anything in particular in this area right here, we can see in other discussions, in other books, about the fact that the book of Acts does not tell us every place that every one of these preachers or apostles went, and we'll talk about that sort of toward the end of this lesson here as we go back to Paul's trip back home, as it were. All right. Somebody was also sent to the churches of what for the same purpose? Galatia. Right. So they were sent to the Galatian church. So this may be. I mean, if you look at 1 Corinthians 16:1. It says that as I gave charge unto the churches of Galatia, so do I to you, as he was talking to the brethren at Corinth. It could be indeed that this is where the collections were taken up at this particular time. And I'm not sure whether we can put a time frame on this as to exactly when 1 Corinthians 16:1 happened in relationship to Paul's stay at Ephesus, whether it happened at the beginning or on his way or during the time or what. So, but anyway, someone was sent to Galatia. We don't have any idea of who it was. So now, Paul, of course, had received during his stay at Ephesus news that one of the congregations was having severe problems. And which church was that? Of course, we've talked about that a lot. Of course, putting 1 Corinthians 1:2 right here kind of gives it away. As a matter of fact, there's another question further on that you go, wow, I don't know how we're ever going to get that. So, so in this instance, while he was in Ephesus, he wrote the letter that we refer to as 1 Corinthians, because there is a 2 Corinthian letter also. And he appears to have sent it by Titus, though if you look at some commentaries, you can see that perhaps Aristarchus and Secundus and the other guy brought it. They're in another book. But anyway, because they were messengers from Corinth that had come to Paul in Ephesus. So that's why some suppose it wasn't Titus that actually took the letter, but rather Titus went to Corinth to actually find out what the response was. I knew there was a word, I couldn't think of it. What their response to that letter was. And of course, Paul expresses himself quite a bit in the book of 2 Corinthians about the fact that he hoped that they weren't so saddened that they were falling away or something, but he was encouraged after he finally met up with Titus to find out that, yes, they were saddened, but they were saddened how? Of what kind of sadness? A godly sorrow, which leads to what? Repentance. Okay, and we looked at that, I think, last time also. So, Paul remained. Oh, okay. Well, here he's sending other people. It says Paul remained where until Pentecost? He remained at Ephesus. And that, so we see that's the late spring of 57. So we have some idea of a date here. Then he traveled north. Whoops. Then he traveled north. We've already answered these questions, right? Because I got ahead of myself. Traveled north to Troas, where he hoped to find Titus. He didn't find Titus. I think he just expected that by this time he would have been back. But, you know, the thing is that, navigating that area, essentially on foot, hundreds of miles of travel, I think would be kind of difficult to pinpoint exactly when you're going to end up in Troas. I think we could probably say, with some fair amount of assuredness, that if he was going to meet Titus in Troas, that Titus most likely took the land route, because otherwise Titus could have just come across from Corinth straight into Ephesus on a ship. but that probably takes more dinero than maybe they were willing to spend. I don't know. So, unfortunately, he didn't find Titus that he was hoping to find him. And we discussed this at the end of the discussion last Wednesday about Paul being so discouraged that he wasn't able to do anything. I'm not sure that from the passages that we read there, I can say that I could come to that conclusion. It does say that Paul was discouraged. It does say that there was a door open to him, and it implies that perhaps the door was not as effective as he wanted it to be because Titus was not there. And these folks made some of the grammars difficult for me to follow. Where he found, so Paul was so discouraged he could not use the door of opportunity open to him in Troas. I'm not sure why not being able to find Titus in Troas would close the door of opportunity to him. It says that he was very discouraged, but I'm sure, as we know Paul, that he went about doing his business to preaching the gospel. So perhaps the gospel was not preached as as fully as he would have hoped to at that time if he'd have been more encouraged. However, we see that Paul has mentioned a number of times in the New Testament that he's been in discouraging states and has not taken that to heart, but he's gone out and has proclaimed the gospel and has been steadfast. All right. What does our bulletin say? I press on to the goal of the high calling. And Paul says that right after he had discussed some of the tribulations that he was up against. Anyway, so it says that he hurried across into Macedonia, and we've already discussed that. So when he did get into Macedonia, he found Titus somewhere at one of the congregations there. I was going to say it was at Philippi, but I think that I'm thinking about something else now. No, that was on the return journey. So I don't think it mentions where he found Titus, but he says that when he was in Macedonia, he came across Titus. So Titus was journeying down to Troas to meet him, and Paul was journeying up into Macedonia, probably with the hopes of running into Titus, which apparently he did. And so Titus had what kind of news about the reception of the letter to Corinth? Positive. Yeah. They were making real proper changes, as we mentioned a minute ago, that they had godly sorrow that leads to repentance. And so even though Paul had to admonish them rather strictly in the 1 Corinthian letter, and as we have gone through that a number of times, as Mickey has pointed out, that there was just problem after problem after problem when we look at the various chapters of 1 Corinthians, we see that they did a good job of straightening that out. And Titus was able to bring Paul a good report, good news about the reception of his letter in Corinth. So Paul was, I'm sure, elated with that. And at this time, while he's in Macedonia, apparently, he wrote 2 Corinthians to resolve some of the remaining differences, some of the remaining problems that were there. Titus apparently took the second letter also with specific instructions wait a minute, did I just terminate something off here at the bottom? Help the... Corinthians have their bounty ready before Paul arrives. Oh, okay. All right. So one of the reasons that Titus was sent with the letter that we refer to as 2 Corinthians is that Paul wanted them, the Corinthians, to make sure that when he got there, that their bounty was already ready. So that he said he didn't want it to seem like it was a matter of, what do they call it? Like he was forcing them to compulsion, right? That he wanted them to make sure that they had that together already, and so that's one of the concerns that he had. All right. So Paul continued then on through Macedonia. Doing what he had been doing all the way through, which is encouraging the brethren of the churches that were already there, and we see that he has a the churches of Macedonia were unusually willing to participate in the proposed gift to Jerusalem. Paul declares that they were willing to give beyond their ability, and I want to say that referred to specifically to Philippi, didn't it? If we look on the book of Philippians on in the fourth chapter, it's on the right-hand page on the left-hand column, about half the way down.
I think it's specifically about 2 Corinthians 8.
Oh. Oh, beyond their means, yeah, okay. Okay, I'm thinking about in Philippians 4:15. Where it says, ye know, ye Philippians, that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church had fellowship with me in the matter of giving and receiving, but ye only, for even in Thessalonica ye sent once and again to my need. And the one that you were talking about, Chris, is in 2 Corinthians, which, 7?
Chapter 8, the first four verses.
Oh, yeah. And much proof of their affliction, right. Beyond their power, they gave of their own accord, beseeching us with much entreaty in regard of this grace and the fellowship and the ministering to the saints. So they had been very happy to do this, and that's to their credit. Of course, Philippi was in Macedonia also. So so he got to Corinth at the start of winter, and he was there for only about 3 months, and he wrote. Yeah, he wrote Romans. I thought that was one of the questions here, but it's actually on your question sheet. and he had never been there to Rome, but he wanted to go there. He wanted to encourage them. Who did he know that was now back there that he had known from Corinth? Pardon? Aquila and Priscilla, right, right. They had been kicked out of Rome by the emperor. All the Jews, or the Christian Jews, I think, were exiled from Rome. And Paul met up with them on his second preaching journey in Corinth. And then at one time they went with him over to Ephesus. And they also discussed with somebody over there and encouraged him. Who was that? That was Apollos, who was very familiar with the gospel, but didn't have it exactly down the right way. So I just forgot their names. Two people, Aquila and Priscilla. They encouraged him and taught him the way, it says, more accurately. Excuse me. And then, so now Paul is back in Corinth after he had. When he was there on the second journey, how long did he spend there? Wasn't it a year and a half? I think it was somewhere in that vicinity. So he was there with Aquila and Priscilla and others establishing the church in Corinth for about a year and a half before he left after the second journey and went back to Antioch. So now he comes there, but he's really only there for about 3 months. And as a matter of fact, when we look in the, I'm pretty sure it's in Acts, it mentions that he was there in Greece. And that's one of the questions on our question sheet. Demetrius. There. Troas, 5 days. Eutychus, also. Which one?
20, verse 2.
2. Oh. No, I'm looking for. There's a place where it actually says it uses the word Greece instead of.
That's 2.
That's 2? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at 1. All right. And so when he had gone through those parts and had given them much exhortation, he came into Greece. So he left Macedonia and went to Greece. Okay. So, pardon? Yeah. Technically, Corinth is in Greece. What province is it in? Achaia. All right. So he's left Macedonia. I don't know whether or not what in between there, whether that's called Greece, and then you come over and you get into Achaia when you're down in Corinth and the other one to the east. What's the big town to the east? Athens. Whether they're both in Achaia, I'm not sure. I'm not sure whether your maps show that for sure or not. But it says that he went in Acts 20 and verse 2 that he came to Greece. And now it says, and when he had spent 3 months there and a plot was laid against him by the Jews, as he was about to set sail for Syria, he determined to return through Macedonia. And so his entire 3-month expedition, as it were, to Greece is mentioned in just one verse right here. And all it says is Greece. So if we want to come to the conclusion that he went to Corinth, we have to go to other places, to the 1st and 2nd Corinthian letter, in order to find out that that's the case. So right here in the book of Acts, though, it's like he just zipped on through, and now he's getting ready to go back. So he was going to go straight across the Aegean Sea and get to Jerusalem. I guess he was heading for Jerusalem quicker, but he found out that there was a plot against him, and so he returned, it says, through Macedonia. Now, see. Oh, so when we skip back a little bit, and we're back supposing that Paul is in Corinth for this 3 months times or 3 month time, or mostly in Corinth for that 3 months, he writes the book of Romans and says that he wanted to go visit them as soon as he had completed his trip to where? Where? Yeah, Jerusalem. And after that, he visited him. He wanted them to send him on his way to where? España. That's right. So he wanted to go there and preach the gospel in Spain. Now, we have no indication, at least no record in the New Testament, that Paul ever was able to make it to Spain. But we know that he did make it to Rome, though not, as you might say, on his own power. It was on somebody else's nickel, I guess. So, anyway. And so the authors here mentioned that the logical route from Corinth to Jerusalem was by ship from the Corinthian seaport of Cenchrea directly to Caesarea. Or it could have been, if he was in Athens or somewhere like that, there was another port. But anyway, there were a couple of ports there where he could just sail directly to Caesarea. Just had to find a ship to do that. But the Jews, once again, were lying in wait to kill him, or I guess this is the first time that they've been lying in wait for him. Later on, they lay in wait for him twice. But that's after this time. So he changes plans and returns through, as we mentioned, Macedonia. Now, there were a number of people that accompanied Paul on his trip to Jerusalem. What was the purpose of these people? All right. So, and as a matter of fact, it mentions a number of the either congregations or areas that these men were from. And so they were the messengers of the churches. So Paul was very concerned at all times that he not be thought of as a person who might abscond with the funds or something like that. He wanted to make sure that everything that he did was above board. And so he made sure that he had people from the various churches who were making these contributions to go back with him to say, oh yeah, we did this and we gave, you know, so much money or so many chickens or whatever we did to contribute to the saints that were in Judea. So they went along helping to bring the bounty, it says, for the four saints. Oh, yeah. So, how do we know that Luke then picks them up in Philippi? Right. The pronouns change. Once again, people will say, well, that's an awful small thing. But the fact of the matter is that when we, see, how far down are we? We're in, I'm gonna, so, in verse 13 of chapter 20, you notice in verse 11, it says, and when he was gone, this is there at Troas, and this is where he raised the young man that fell out of the window and was taken up dead. It says, and when he was gone up and had broken the bread and eaten and had talked with them a long while, even till break of day, so he departed. And they brought the lad alive and were not a little comforted, But we going before to the ship set sail for Assos, there intending to take in Paul, for so he had appointed, intending himself to go by land. Does that say Philippi?
Verse six.
Oh, we sailed away. Okay, sorry, I was too far down. So in verse 4, you'll see it says, and there accompanied him as far as Asia, Sopater, Berea, and so on. And it says, and 5, but these had gone before and were waiting for us at Troas. So we see a pronoun change right there in the middle of the paragraph, indicating that Luke, the writer of this book, is changing from telling something about them in the third person to telling something about them in the first person. And so we now know that Luke has once again joined the party. So he stayed behind there in Philippi when Paul went on other places. So these other men were from where?
Thessalonica.
Derby. And Asia. So we see that there were 7 men. There's 4 places mentioned here. Now, these 3 are what? They're cities or towns, right? But this is a province, right? So we can expect perhaps that the other 3 people were related to some of the congregations that were in Asia, because it says that there were 7 men. Now, as they were traveling down to Jerusalem, he was told by the Holy Spirit that he was going to be bound. Now, as they're going down, in Acts 20 and 6, they stopped for a few days in where? In Troas, as they were dropping down from Philippi. And then, yeah, that's where they broke the bread, and that's where in Acts 20, early, what authority do we gain regarding the Lord's Supper there? Day of the week, right? Yeah, the time that is going. It says that on the first day of the week, when we were gathered together to break bread. So we see right there that we see an apostolically approved example that shows that the Apostle Paul met with the brethren in Troas to partake of the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week. That shows that the authorization for partaking of the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week has been established by apostolically approved example. And so it's a good place to remember, to know that shows that's where the first day of the week is proven to us, that's the day to take the Lord's Supper. Now, Paul just mentions, or Luke just mentions in writing about this, that it was on the first day of the week. So what conclusion can we come to about which first day of the week it was? Was it the first day of the week of the second quarter of the year? Or how often does the first day of the week come? Every week. That's why it's called the first day of the week. So much like the command from the Old Testament to keep the Sabbath day holy, one might ask, well, I mean, is that a Sabbath day every quarter or every half year or once a year to make it like a high Sabbath or something like that? No. The Sabbath occurred every Sabbath day, or every what we refer to as Saturday, and we see that indeed that was the understanding of the Jewish people at that time, that when God said to remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, that he meant every Sabbath day. And on this instance, and in other instances, when we talk about the Lord's Supper, we understand that when he says that they gathered together on the first day of the week, that it was the first day of the week that was being authorized. Not, you know, not June 27th or something like that. It was the first day of the week. And there's a first day of the week every week, near as I can tell. All right, so after they left Troas, they continued along the shoreline to where? Miletus. That was 36 miles from Ephesus, so that's still a fair piece to walk. So, but what did he do there from Miletus?
He called for the elders of the church.
So he called for the elders of the church at Ephesus. So I'm thinking that they had to be laying over there at Miletus for, you know, a weekish type thing, because it would have taken maybe 2 days to get a message to them, another 2 days if they just picked up everything and left immediately to get back down to him in Miletus. Why didn't he just go to Ephesus?
He didn't want to spend too much time to get to Jerusalem.
Right. He had a deadline, as it were, to get to Jerusalem by a certain time, and he felt that if he went to Ephesus, he would be delayed in doing that because there was, you know, there were things for him to do. So he realized that he would come back at a later time, or he planned to come back at a later time anyway, and can continue to work in Asia. That, of course, never happened. But he didn't want to get tied up at Ephesus. So he asked the elders to come down, and they met him at Miletus. Curiously enough, the authors say this about 36 miles from Ephesus, and he sent for the elders from Ephesus, sure, to join him, as he did not expect to see them again. But if we look at the places where the ship stopped, as far as those that had brethren, we can see that the ship stopped at three places where he specifically talks that there were brethren there. And where were those? Acts 21, 3 and 4. All right, Tyre. And then the next place that the ship stopped? Ptolemais, yeah. And finally, in big town, Caesarea. Big town, small print. Once again, Paul was warned at Caesarea that sort of like he wasn't going to leave, you know, Jerusalem alive type thing. Anyway, he was told that bonds awaited him there in Jerusalem. All right, so that kind of takes care of just sort of a review of Paul's third journey. Let me see if I can switch over to one of these other that's got the questions for lesson 48. Yellow. Come back. Oh boy, we're going to have dancing things there. I think that's what I want. All right. My computer and I don't get along very well, apparently. All right. So when we... at least I came up. So now let's just quickly transition over to the question sheet in the about 8 minutes that we have left, and just look through them real quickly. All of you should have a question sheet for lesson 48 that was handed out or put on the back table last Sunday, and we'll have all these questions in it. So now as we go through this question sheet, then I think we've probably gone through a good portion of these already. So where did Paul start this third journey at? Antioch of what? Of Syria. Yeah. So if you look at Acts 18:23, you'll see that that's sort of the start of the third, what people refer to as third missionary journey. Now, as Paul was going through Galatia and Phrygia, as we were talking earlier, visiting congregations, who did he strengthen?
Disciples.
Right, the disciples. So you can see also in the same verse there where we started off the travel that he went through Galatia and Phrygia, establishing the disciples, or strengthening the disciples. This one here is sort of out of order as far as in the text goes, but that's where we're going to next. So in what city did religious cult grow up? That'd be nice, but it's the wrong one. It's Ephesus. That's where we're going. Paul never went to Alexandria. The religious cult around Artemis or Diana was in Ephesus. And as a matter of fact, the people there felt that that was sort of the center of the religion of Diana. And perhaps they had reason to think so. We already discussed this. Who was further instructed in the Lord by Aquila and Priscilla after they went to Ephesus? Apollos. You see that in Acts 18:26. I'm not sure that I like this term rebaptized. I probably should have taken that off of there. We should just say how many were baptized into Jesus Christ because they had been previously been baptized into the baptism of John. A dozen of them. Okay. So if you look in Acts 19 and verse 7, you'll see that's what happened. These people were not rebaptized. I mean, they had been baptized at one time. But if we look at this and think about rebaptized, that means that we're doing something that they had lawfully done before. They had not lawfully been baptized before, as it were. Yes?
We talked about this before. Wasn't what John was doing lawful at that time?
It was lawful at the time, yes.
It's not.
And I think Mickey used this word several times, authoritative. At this particular time of the gospel, now, it's not authoritative anymore. In other words, the baptism of John was unto the remission of sins. It was not for the remission of sins. Melissa, did you have a...
Well, and this is into Christ.
Right.
The baptism that they had with John was not into Christ. Christ hadn't died.
Right. So that's the thing, is that John was going around and he was baptizing folks. He was baptizing them for preparation for the gospel, preparation for remission of sins, but he was not baptizing them for the remission of sins. These 12 people had been baptized into John's baptism. They knew something about Jesus Christ, apparently, but they hadn't been properly baptized. John first and then Jenny.
So it's kind of surprising, given that baptism just means to be immersed, they were baptized twice, but not for the same
Not for the same reason. Yeah, Jenny?
Can we say that it's similar to the passage? I think it's in Galatians 1 where he's talking about another gospel that's not another. So it's another baptism that's not another.
I suppose so. Except this baptism was not an unauthorized baptism at the time that apparently it occurred, though... This has been quite a number of years after John's death. I mean, we're talking here decades, right? So there may have been people still going around just preaching John's baptism. I don't know. Apollos, yeah, was not schooled in the... Sarah, did you have a comment?
No,
oh. Yeah, okay.
So they should have been worded a little better as far as not saying rebaptized.
Yeah. And as I was putting these in, and I thought, I ought to change that. And I thought... Nah. So, that's right. They were baptized into Jesus Christ. So previously they were not baptized into Jesus Christ. So, yeah. All right. For 3 months, Paul preached at what location in Ephesus? The synagogue, right. Acts 19 and 8. And then after that, he went where? Where'd he go after that?
School of Tyrannus.
Right. We don't have that on here, which is kind of strange. Now to mention how to put it on there. Paul remained in Ephesus for 2 to 3 years and performed many what? Miracles. Okay. All right. Acts 19:11. And what were publicly burned in the streets of Ephesus? Books. How much money was that, Jenny? 3.2 million. Okay. Anyway, a lot. You know, just but the thing we need to remember is that just the creation of a book at that time was very expensive. Melissa?
There were specific types of books that were being burned. They weren't just burning books. They were burning books about magic.
Right, right. Magic books. Books of magic, rather. Right.
Curious Arts.
Yeah, yeah. So Acts 19:9 is where that is. And then, notice in your question sheet it says, who did Paul send on to Macedonia? But it should say, whom did Paul send on to Macedonia? So I changed that. Whom did he send? That's right. Timothy and Erastus, Acts 19:22. They were sent ahead of Paul as he was getting ready to leave Ephesus to go make sure that the churches of Macedonia were prepared for Paul to come through and take up the collection. What two books of the New Testament did Paul write from Ephesus? All right, so I've got 1 Corinthians and maybe Galatians. Okay, so 1 Corinthians 16 and 8, you can see a reference to the fact that he was staying there in Ephesus, so a reference in the book of 1 Corinthians. And if you look at 1 Corinthians 16:1, it says, as I gave order unto the churches of Galatia, so do ye. You might say, whoopsie, I gave it away. You might say that it's possible that that's a reference to the fact that he may have written the book of Galatians in Ephesus. Or it could have been written in Corinth. Whom did Paul send to Corinth to bring a collection for the poor in Jerusalem and to inquire concerning the effect of the 1 Corinthian letter? Titus. Okay. So let's pick up at question 12 next time.